Blog Talk Radio.
Changing Direction with Michelle Rosenthal is sponsored by Timberline Knolls Residential Treatment Center. Want to change who you are and how you live? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Changing Direction with me, Michelle Rosenthal, where every show is all about how you can create the change you choose. On every episode, we combine scientific research, cutting-edge guests, and personal stories that highlight the challenges and successes of deliberately deciding to change the direction of your life. Now, let's start making your change possible.
Hey, this is Michelle Rosenthal, and I want to welcome you to Changing Direction, your source for how to heal trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder. And you know that as the founder of HealMyPTSD.com, my whole mission is to bring you information. And let's talk about what HealMyPTSD.com really is, because the mission there is the mission here and in everything I do, because I launched the HealMyPTSD.com website to be the place where survivors, caregivers, and healing professionals could come for information, cutting-edge research, and ideas for how to feel better and reclaim your life after trauma. And indeed, that is what we do there. And we do it from the consumer perspective. So if you're joining us for the first time on the air today, welcome. If you have been with me for, holy cow, the show's been on air for 4 years. And I thank you for being here with me and for entering the discussions and all the ways that we do here and online and in the Heal My PTSD forum, talking about how to heal, how to move forward, how to feel better, what it takes to come out of the darkness and into the light. And today we are really literally talking about darkness to light, because today's show is all about grief and, more importantly, the next step in grief, mourning. It's all about where do we go with the pain of the loss. That can be the loss of a life, the loss of a friend, the loss of ourselves, the loss of our identity, the loss of opportunities. So today's show, I'm interviewing an expert. I think you are really, really going to love him. He has a terrific approach to everything and a really wonderful personality, which really helps when you're talking about grief, because grief is something we don't usually discuss in post-traumatic stress disorder. But today, and after trauma, we really need to discuss what it means to deal with the grief that trauma brings, and where do we go with it? What do we do? So I'm going to get to my interview with Dr. Alan Wolfelt, who is the founder and director of the Center for Loss and Life Transition. He also, I just love interviewing real experts who are real people. He has dealt with his own loss as a child, actually, and that really, from the age of 16, got him going on this mission to help people with grief and mourning. And his ideas are pretty radical, and by that I mean they break with the norm of ignoring grief and mourning and really go into it in a very gentle and very comfortable way. So we'll get to that in a minute. Two announcements. First of all, I just want to remind you that the Heal My PTSD forum is open, and it is free, and it is growing every single day. You can come there and just observe, because sometimes you just want to hang out and watch what people are talking about. You can be completely anonymous, which is very cool, if you want to be able to just sort of feel comfortable and safe being yourself without anybody knowing who you are, or you can use your real name in the forum. I do, but many people are anonymous, and that is cool too. So you can choose the name that best suits you. And in the forum, we are talking about all of the PTSD symptoms and all of the issues that come up in the recovery process and all the things that hold you back. So please feel free to join us at healthunlocked.com/HealMyPTSD. The forum is completely private. All of our posts do not show up in social media or Google or any place else. Completely private forum. All of our settings make it so. So you can join us at healthunlocked.com/HealMyPTSD. And here's the really big announcement that I have kept quiet and under wraps. But in celebration, and this is going to sound weird, but in celebration of our four-year anniversary of this radio show, which started as Your Life After Trauma and then morphed into Changing Direction, because I realized, really, we were talking about Your Life After Trauma, and even more than that, we were talking about how do you change the direction of your life after trauma. So today is going to be our very last show for an indefinite amount of time. The show is going on hiatus because my schedule has become so all over the place right now with the release of Your Life After Trauma, the book, with the upcoming release of my next book, Heal Your PTSD, which is coming out in September, and all of the other things that are going on right now. The radio show will be on hiatus probably until the fall. So I thank you for listening. The archives are free and always available on changeyouchoose.com. There's a podcast link right in the navigation menu. So you can find a little dose of some expert help in your healing anytime you wish. And we will be back. I'll let you know, because we'll put it out on social media and in our newsletter and to our radio subscribers when I'm coming back. But for now, we are here together. So let's go into the rest of the show. Here is Dr. Wolfelt is traveling. He's actually just on his way to a training that he's doing, so he was unable to be with us live today. But here is my conversation that I had with him earlier in the week, all about grief and mourning and how to reframe post-traumatic stress disorder as traumatic grief. Take a listen. All right, Dr. Alan Wolfelt, welcome to Changing Direction Radio. I am super glad that you're here today because you, like me, have a very positive perspective on what we can do to heal and to grow and to change, even in the midst of PTSD. So welcome to Changing Direction.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity to let your listeners know a little bit about my new resource that hopefully brings hope for healing.
You know, it's so funny. I was speaking this morning to a trauma group, and somebody came up to me afterward and said, you know, the most important thing you've done here today is to offer us hope. And you just used that word, and I think, isn't hope where really healing begins? Without hope, can we even, well, to use the word hope, can we even hope to heal if we don't engage in hope on some level? What's your perspective on hope in healing?
Well, I think it's the central essential piece that that we bring to helping relationships. You know, one of my favorite definitions of hope is an expectation of a good that is yet to be. So mm-hmm. I always remind myself every morning at my center for loss, you know, that darkness is the chair upon which light sits. And even when people are in the midst of loss and grief and trauma, without that healing ingredient of hope, there's no bridge out of that darkness into the light. So I totally agree with you that hope is the essential ingredient as a starting place. It's not the be-all, end-all, but it's essential. If I don't have hope, that expectation of coming out of the dark into the light, then that creates kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think particularly as it relates to models of helping people who struggle with post-traumatic stress, that we need to bring hope for their healing.
Exactly. I agree, too. And I know myself as a trauma survivor, if I hadn't hoped, I wouldn't have taken the steps to engage in the recovery process because there were some days when I didn't think it would work. So what was the point?
I think, as you referenced there, sometimes we need bridges in our hope, in the sense that if I'm in a state of hopelessness, I need to be around others that I can borrow hope from at that time. And I think that's something we, as those of us who are caregivers, need to have an understanding of, is that out of hopelessness can come hopefulness, but that sometimes people in the midst of trauma have to borrow that hope because they can't see out of that darkness. But I just really think there's such importance to that recognition that, you know, darkness is the chair upon which light sits. We can't quickly bring someone, another human being, to the light that's in the dark. We always have to join people before in any way there's space for movement. And, of course, in my new resource, I talk about one of not the entire piece, but a missing piece is the need to bring hope through allowing people to mourn the losses and the traumas that have impacted their life. And that's not always easy to do in a mourning-avoidant culture where we tell each other, carry on, keep your chin up, keep busy, God wouldn't give you anything more than you can bear. There's not always space for people to mourn. And so it occurred to me in reflecting on this important topic that, you know, I wanted to at least add to the discussion that too many of our contemporary treatments for PTSD often lack an understanding that the symptoms are metacommunications about underlying need, the need to be able to take our grief and convert it into mourning, if you will.
Definitely. That makes absolute and utter sense. And you're referring to your new book, Reframing PTSD as Traumatic Grief, How Caregivers Can Companion Traumatized Grievers Through Catch-Up Mourning. And I want to get into that deeply, but I want to just circle back to something, because you use a phrase that I love, we can borrow hope. And yet I'm not sure that while I was going through my recovery, if you had said that, I would have known what to do. And I probably would have asked you, how do I borrow hope? So in your experience, what do you suggest for survivors? How do they engage with hope by borrowing it? Do you have certain steps that you recommend?
Well, in part, it's recognition that surrendering to something that's bigger than you requires a shared social context, that allowing yourself to have somebody companion you in ways that allow for borrowing hope requires a surrendering to the process that this is something that I can't manage. It's managing me. And so while it's somewhat complex, to be able to borrow hope from another requires a process of surrendering to the reality that what I'm faced with is bigger than me. And where we in North American culture, I think, at times get in trouble with allowing for that is to think we've got to do this on our own. But we can't do it on our own when we face trauma. It's by definition, mourning is the shared response to loss or grief gone public. And so hope comes from surrendering to the reality that it doesn't mean I have a character flaw, because I need other human beings to support me in this coming out of the dark and into the light. So it's kind of a paradox. In order to have hope, I have to allow for my hopelessness and find people around me that I can borrow that hope from. But it's not really it's a nonverbal. You know, one of my mentors years ago taught me, from the moment people, you're present to people, they should feel a nonverbal sense of a belief and a hope that they can come out of the dark and into the light. And that's always been so helpful to me. It's not an arrogance. It's anchored in humility, but it's a sense that I will stay present to you. I will not abandon you. I will not treat you. I will companion you. And the distinction there is, you know, treat comes from a Latin root word, tracture. It means to drag. And the last thing a person who's had a trauma needs is to be dragged. They need, you know, I recently wrote an article about this slow grief movement, that we need to, instead of thinking we should do something quickly and efficiently, we know the nature of trauma requires convalescence, which means slow and recursive and not be so attached to outcome and things like that. So I may have said too much there, but I think that's partly what I reflect on when I think of borrowing hope.
I love it. You can never say too much, because the more you say, the more clear everything becomes. So I want to start our discussion specifically around your ideas of reframing PTSD as traumatic grief with a little excerpt from your new book, I like to always set up conversations by here's what it sounds like in the book, and then we'll expand from there. So you write in this book, Reframing PTSD as Traumatic Grief, you write, as I see it, the problem with the current medical model approach to PTSD care is that it does not fully honor grief and mourning. Rather than allowing for the creation of safe spaces or sanctuaries where hurting people can mourn in doses when their heads and hearts are ready, many of the forms of treatment used in the current model encourage people to hurry up and recover from their psychic injuries. Pain and feelings of loss are seen as something to prevent or get beyond as soon as possible. Yet, only if we befriend and experience our wounds do we ultimately reconcile, not resolve, significant losses. That is such a beautiful, eloquent, and accurate statement. And let's start our conversation there. What led you to write Reframing PTSD as Traumatic Grief?
Well, that probably goes back to my own calling. I discovered at a young age through some losses that occurred in my life that I had a passion for creating places of sanctuary for my fellow human beings to mourn well, because I discovered that if we don't mourn well, we don't live well, we don't love well. And so I wrote a mission statement at age 16 that I would have a center for loss, and wrote my first book about the needs of grieving children and teens when I was 19. And I'm so honored that people since that time have invited me to speak about my passion for this area of caregiving. And I felt that as I continued to witness the appropriate interest in PTSD, that my concern was that there was this missing piece in recent years where we were out of, our historical medical model of mental health care, not recognizing that a central element of helping someone who's had a trauma is to create sacred space, or as I referred to the word sanctuary, where people can disengage from normal demands and give attention to that which they need to give attention to. That there seemed to be this preoccupation with treating symptoms that I perceived as meta communications about underlying needs. And I've articulated, that there are six central needs of mourning, and that if we can create a holding space for people to befriend those needs, that they're quite capable of it not becoming some lifelong disorder, but instead it's an injury that needs appropriate attention in ways that don't resolve but integrate or reconcile it into life. So that's kind of a very brief history of my passionate interest in this area. And I just stood by, I think, for too many years before I decided to make a contribution, because I too was certainly learning and never proposed to be a PTSD expert, if you will. But I think I had a voice that, as a responsible rebel, by that I say someone who questions assumptive models, that finally just said, I need to speak up about my perception that in a culture that when it lacks an understanding of something is quick to label it a disorder, which then takes away the hope that you beautifully mentioned. When we perceive something as a pathology, it's often out of our lack of understanding of what to do to help someone to integrate loss. And so I felt that I wanted to make this contribution to stop conveying that PTSD is you're sick and you're disordered and you need to be cured, but instead that you have an appropriate trauma response, and now we need to create conditions to help you integrate that loss into your life.
I love that, because what you're really talking about is normalizing the PTSD experience and healing process rather than making us feel like freaks. And I can just say, from my own experience for so many years, I just thought I was crazy, and I just accepted I was crazy. And some of the messages that I got were, that is the thing to do. And so I've worked really hard, both personally and professionally, to engage in the community process that you're really talking about, which is turning all of that around. So taking all of that and applying it, you said earlier, if we don't mourn well, we don't live well or love well. And I think that's such a wonderful statement. Let's clarify and define further, what does it mean to mourn well?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. Let's start with the distinction between grief and mourning, that through no one's fault, I may have never learned. You know, grief is our internal response, the thoughts and feelings inside. If I have the capacity, for example, to give and receive love, and I have a loss, come to grief. I never say grief is universal, of course, because it's predicated on our capacity to attach. But if you attach and you have a loss, you come to grief. Now the question becomes, am I going to be able to mourn? And mourning is, in contrast to grief, the shared response, or if you will, grief gone public. So when I think of this in the context of PTSD, I think grief is normal and necessary internal response to loss. It's not just after the death of somebody, but can relate to a variety of losses or traumas that impact our lives. Never, you know, something of value is harmed or taken away, we come to grief. And then I always think, well, grief is not an illness. You know, let's remind ourselves of that before we talk about mourning here in a little more depth. Let's remember that grief is the other side of the coin of love. It's our capacity to love that invites the need to come to grief and then to mourn in the face of life losses or transitions. And fundamentally, as I try to articulate as best I can in my book, grief is inherently a spiritual journey. You know, as we become a more secular culture and we create models in mental health care, that there's often the missing piece of our understanding that involves the inherent spiritual nature of life. So anyway, grief is a response to injury that affects all aspects of our being, physical, cognitive, emotional, social, and spiritual. So in other words, it's a psychic blow that affects our bodies, our feelings, our relationships, our thoughts. And again, I want to emphasize our spirits, our life force, our divine spark, if you will. Those kind of semantics don't get talked much about in traditional mental health, but we all have a divine spark, and sometimes things come along in life that extinguish your divine spark, or at minimum mute it, and you need fellow human beings to assist with that. So in terms of your question about mourning is public, or the shared response to loss. And if we live in a mourning avoidant culture that's quick to label things as pathological, often there's no space to legitimize people's need to mourn. So let's back into that a little bit by reminding ourselves trauma is an event of any kind of intensity, brutality, magnitude of horror that would overwhelm any human capacity to cope. It's an injury. It's something hurtful. It wounds our emotions, our spirits, our beliefs about ourselves, and as you said, your identity, about who you are in the world around you. So naturally, we grieve these losses. In part, then, do we have safe places to mourn them? And again, mourning is what? It's grief gone public. And what mourning does is it creates the capacity to experience change and movement, or what we fancifully call, I call it in my writings, perturbation, which is an interesting concept that literally means the characteristics of mourning will soften over time if I take my grief and I allow it to become mourning. And the beauty of it is there's no one or only right way to mourn. And I'll be very brief here now, but I'd like to have your listeners know that this relates to mourning relates to the concept of feeling, if you will. Feeling comes from the Indo-European root word. It means to touch. So just as we allow ourselves to be touched when we attach or we love, when we have losses or we're traumatized, we must also allow ourselves to activate our capacity to be touched and changed. So to integrate grief into your life requires you allow yourself to be touched. So a central learning is that if you can't feel a feeling, if you become closed in your ability to use it or be changed by it, instead of experiencing movement, you risk becoming stuck or into forms of what we call chronic grief, because you're not converting your grief into authentic mourning, if you will. And so my perception is that many of the contemporary treatments lack an understanding. And I don't say this to fault anybody. I just don't think there's been a lot of training of clinicians to understand that when you have a trauma, it brings grief, and grief must be converted to mourning. And until you do that, you can propose all sorts of symptomatic treatments. But until you understand at the core of a person's being that when they've had a trauma, that they're going to need to mourn that, they can live in what I call the shadow of the ghosts of their grief. Because if you keep grieving but you don't convert it to mourning, instead of it softening over time, it hardens, if you will. So that's a long-winded response to your question, but I hope it's helpful for your listeners to understand that important distinction between grief and mourning. When we say that we live in a mourning-avoidant culture, many people today are impacted by losses and they grieve them, but they may not have places of sanctuary to mourn them. And if you don't mourn well, you don't live well, you don't love well.
My guest today is Dr. Alan Wolfelt, the author of Reframing PTSD as Traumatic Grief, How Caregivers Can Companion Traumatized Grievers Through Catch-Up Mourning. And I would say even that how we can companion ourselves as survivors. If you're interested in learning more about Dr. Wolfelt and the book and his process and programs, you can check him out at centerforloss.com. So, Dr. Wolfelt, we have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to ask you how we do this. So I have two questions for us to finish up with. I'll take one at a time. When we talk about mourning well in PTSD and converting grief into mourning, and that really means going public with our grief, can you give me an example of what that looks like, either through a case history story or through a process step-by-step that you recommend?
Well, yeah, I think I could give you an illustration of a 39-year-old male who, when he was 9 years old, his mother died by suicide, and the family rule became do not talk about it. Dad remarried within 6 months. There was no ceremony to initiate converting grief to mourning. So he had a trauma experience at age 9, was disenfranchised from befriending it in any way. He lived in the shadow of the ghosts of grief over those 30 years, affecting the quality of his intimate relationships. He self-treated his pain with chemical abuse. He lived with low-grade depression for years that evolved into a major depression in his late 30s, thank goodness, because that's what eventually led him to get help to do what I would call catch-up mourning. It's never too late to mourn. That's part of the good news. But it certainly has consequences when you're carrying grief and you're not mourning in ways that integrated into your life. And so, you know, 30 years later, that's why we never want to say time heals all wounds. Time has nothing to do unless you actively mourn. I had the honor of helping him go back and do what I call catch-up mourning related to the trauma that he had 30 years earlier. So nobody helped him do the needs of mourning that I attempt to articulate in my book, where the need to acknowledge the death, to befriend the pain, in his case, to remember the life, to develop a new identity, to search for meaning, and to get ongoing support. Six central needs that I've attempted to identify as central when you have a traumatic loss. And so, in the context of your question, my job 30 years later was to help him go back and do what he wasn't able to do at age 9 so that he could integrate that trauma loss into his life. I hope that's helpful to you as an illustration.
Absolutely. It definitely is. And so that leads into my follow-up question, which is, what happens? What are the benefits of transforming grieving into mourning? When we learn how to mourn well, what happens and how does that progress PTSD recovery?
Well, I talk about integrating carried grief leads to healing, which means literally to become whole again. And I'd remind us that healing isn't curing. That's a medical model term that means remedying or correcting. You can't remedy grief, but you can reconcile or integrate it. I love as a helping goal the word reconciliation. It comes from Middle English. It means to make your life good again. What a lovely way to have hope that you can help people make their lives good again. And so reconciling is not about closure. It's really about opening, connecting with the depths of the trauma, the losses that you've had, becoming more ultimately loving, kind, compassionate. I speak to specific criteria that I look for where people begin to have more of a sense of future. They see a softening of symptoms that they've had, like anhedonia, the inability to have joy in their life. They begin to, you know, as you come out of the dark, you begin to live again. You become awake. You become alive. You become hope-filled. And so those are. I have a whole chapter dedicated to the helping goal of not resolving a trauma, which denotes an end, but to reconciling and looking at how you're transformed. Transformation is my helping goal. How are you? Transformation means an entire change in form. You've had a life-changing traumatic experience. sadly, sometimes people get, you know, quickly labeled with a disorder, which already builds in stigma and takes away hope. And again, what I'm trying to do is reframe and say, out of the dark can come light, can come reconciliation, can come transformation. And that is my hope, that this new resource just adds to the discussion about the importance of taking grief, allowing it to become mourning, thinking of this as being an injury, not a disorder, engaging my colleagues in more discussion about reframing PTSD as traumatic grief, and then helping people be more self-compassionate who do have these special needs, and learn ways to work on those six needs of mourning, discover ways to foster peer support and not just think of SLP, you know, you go to traditional mental health people and they treat you, explore additional training needs for companioning people, not treating them related to this, and advocating that others consider becoming responsible rebels with me, where we question assumptive models and we take a whole new look at this area that's so critical to our fellow human beings.
My guest today has been Dr. Alan Wohlfelt, author of Reframing PTSD as Traumatic Grief, How Caregivers Can Companion Traumatized Grievers Through Catch-Up and Mourning. You can find out more about him and his book at centerforloss.com. Dr. Wohlfelt, I'm so sorry that our time is over, because I feel like this is such a rich topic and there's so much else to explore in it. So I am going to have to find ways to connect with you further so that we can have the longer discussion and really dig into more deeply what you're talking about. But in closing, I will just let you know how much I love the book and how much I love the idea, because it allows us to approach a part of post-trauma or PTSD in terms of what's really going on for us inside, that's not about the science of survival, but really is more about the spirit of the soul, as you were talking about. So thank you so much for being here today.
You are so welcome. I look forward to continuing to dialogue with you in the future, and I hope people will consider going to our website and seeing when I'll be in their area speaking about this. I do one-day workshops on this topic across North America, and they can find out more about that by just simply going to our website, and hopefully I'll get to meet some of your listeners at some point. So thank you very much.
Excellent, and we'll say again that the website is Center for Loss. .com, and that is really spelling out all of the words, Center for Loss, F-O-R, for loss.com. Dr. Wohlfelt, have a great rest of the day.
Thank you. You as well.
So, okay, learned a lot, right? I know I did, because I really needed to mourn right after my trauma, and for so many years after, and definitely during my recovery, I was so overwhelmed sometimes by the sense of grief for the time that I had lost. It took me almost 30 years to come out of PTSD, more than 20, about 25 of those, because I didn't know I had it. but I went through a long period of grieving who I could have been, what my life could have been, the kid that I was, who was so drastically and dramatically altered. And in all of that, didn't know what to do, didn't know how to do, didn't know there was a way to do anything about it. So I hope that this has been useful and helpful to you in sort of reframing the idea that part of what you're feeling is grief, and that's normal, and what we do then is process that grief, particularly through mourning. So as we wrap up today's show, I am going to leave you with a healing thought of the day, which, oddly enough, this is the healing thought of the day that went out this morning to our list of subscribers, and you can take a listen to how weird the synchronicity is, because the healing thought of the day that went out today is called How to Grieve the Past, and it is actually a little excerpt from my new book, Your Life After Trauma, Powerful Practices to Reclaim Your Identity, because I do recognize how important it is to grieve, and I do address the grief process and how to move through it in your life after trauma. So there you go. How weird is synchronicity? This is the healing thought for the day and how we are ending the show. Here it is. You can grieve the life and person you used to be or could have been, and also simultaneously begin incorporating elements of that other life into who you are today. You can resuscitate what you miss about that past self, regardless of whether or not it actually existed, so that it lives again in the present. And that really, that idea of hope, that idea of choice, that idea of action, that idea that things can change, that idea that you can choose, permeates the entire recovery process. So see what you could do this week going forward. How can you tap into that sense of I can choose, I can grieve, I can see what I loved, because that's really what grief is love. I can see what I loved or would have loved, and I can start looking for ways that I can experience that again. So until the show resumes back at its normal schedule, I leave you with this thought that is always top of mind to me. You have enormous healing potential. The goal is learning to access it. You can do this. Dig deep. I believe in you.
You can conquer the past and create your future. For more information about Changing Direction Radio and to listen to our free archives and podcasts, visit changeyouchoose.com.